Hey guys, it's Friday night. We are marching towards that 100,000 subscriber mark. That's the point when YouTube can no longer ignore us. So help us get there. Right, this week, if you comment on this video, if you like it, if you hit subscribe, if you ding the little bell, and please share the video with your mates out there to help us get the spread of the video out there, because the algorithms don't share it. We rely on you guys to share it. Right, this week, if you do all of that, you could be in with a chance of winning Blood of the Phoenix. Justin, bring it
It is here.
So there's Blood of the Phoenix. We're giving them away for any of you sharp-eyed guys out there. It's a massive box with the two types of Eldar in it. We have a couple left over. This one we're going to give to you guys to keep your hobby marching on.
And if you want to run
Right.
Unari, you can run both forces.
So there we go. It's Friday night. It's time to get started because the weekend starts now. Hey everybody, welcome to the weekend. We really want to give you guys some awesome hobbies. So get commenting and we'll get that box of Blood of the Phoenix out to you. Right. This is the first opportunity this week I've had to sit down with these fine guys as well. So how are you doing, team? How is isolation treating you?
Fine.
I'm okay. It's nice still being able to come into the office and get all the toys and goodies out to everybody.
Isolation is great. This is my
Oh,
hobby. I've got
you
to
got a
talk
bit
about
of
that.
hobby.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about that on Sunday.
Awesome.
Ah, there you go.
Awesome. Right. Okay, so just to bring everybody up to speed, the Spring Clean Challenge is well underway over on tabletop.com. We have a whole bunch of projects all fired up in there now. Remember, we're giving away 4 50 quid store vouchers, okay, to the four categories, which is the best kind of tutorial based one, the one that shows the most skill, the one that, regardless of skill in tutorials, just shows a really cool idea, regardless of how it's executed, and then finally, for the young bloods. If you could help us share the Spring Clean Challenge, we did reach out to our contacts in Games Workshop and said, "Hey, would you give it a share?" We never heard back, so we rely on you guys. You know, so if you could get onto your Facebooks and your Twitters and whatever it is that you use these days, and yeah. Share about the Spring Clean Challenge because it is a real opportunity for us, especially now that we're all cooped up at home, to find something that has either stalled, or maybe you never really got started on, or something that you felt you completed, but you're looking at it now and thinking, I could go back and do a touch-ups to that to make that even better. And it's all about just bringing a project back up to whatever you would consider a new level of completion.
Yeah, I don't even mind spinning a couple of projects because I've been spinning my worms because I got loads of worms to paint. And last week I was doing some Jawas. Probably next week I might do some Blood and Plunder. So like, you could do a few things if you want as
Don't blow
well.
your hobby time.
You could
Don't blow your
do
hobby time.
Lloydie is going all out on this spring cleaning. So it's
Well,
I
one
have a
model here, one model there.
I have as well. I have like you, Lloyd, I have a couple of projects that I'm kind of toying with at the moment. One is I'm doing a fantasy army based on the Mongols. So I have a 28 mil Mongol army that I'm going to rebase as one of my game agnostic fantasy armies. And I've got a couple of cool mega monsters that I'm adding to that. And then the other Spring Clean Challenge that I've entered into is with Gaz and Jerry and Greystoke from the site. And we have dug out our San Nazir project. So the San Nazir mega game is now being. Hey, Jerry! The San Nazir mega game is now being actively worked on again. So I pulled out some of the previous work myself and Jerry and Jim Oriskany had done, just to get my mind where we were a couple of years back when we had been working on it. And we have set to work on it. We've got scales and all sorts of stuff. But I will talk a little bit more about the coolness that is Saint-Nazaire on Sunday as well. Right. Before we get too far into the show, we have to do the most important part of the show. This industry relies on the innovation of our little guys. It relies on all of us collectively supporting the little guys, because those little guys come up with ideas and they generate new things for us, and they deserve our support. So it's Indie of the Week. Jerry, who did we pick?
This week we had a look at Studio Miniatures. So a guy called Stuart Hamilton does a range of theoretically modern survivors for his own little game, but they can be sort of fitted into anything you can lay your hands on, like The Walking Dead or that sort of thing. And if you start hooking through them, you'll discover that quite a lot of them come from popular culture. So you may see a few there who look like they may have been in zombie films of their own.
I see a boomstick.
You do see a boomstick, yeah. And not just zombie films, but also, you know, 80s horrors. There's El Mariachi Mexican. Oh. There is indeed. and they're split down into various sort of subcategories. So here we have the survivors, and it shows you things like there's the A-Team and Crockett and Tubbs, but Cain and Abel are also there from the Xbox computer games. There's Robin Williams. Anyway, there's a wealth of really nice modern survivor miniatures that you can use for various games. So if you want to play Predator, there is a Predator setup. There's also a range called the Medieval Mayhem, which they're not medieval miniatures. This is not Monty Python's Knights of the Holy Grail.
It's definitely not.
What they are is a bunch of Renaissance fair actors in the States who happened to get caught up during the zombie apocalypse. So they just happened to be in the outfits they would wear in the Renaissance.
These are my favorite models.
They have the rabbit. They have the rabbit and the talked about but never seen badger.
Yeah.
I have an idea for a badger. And you may see things like Woody Harrelson's there, Blackadder's there. I mean,
very cool.
The range is absolutely superb.
So the whole set, 120 quid, the whole set would set you back.
Not bad.
It's currently sitting there in a box beside.
There's something for you, Lloyd. Lots of shield transfers.
Have they a beastie? Yeah. A big beastie.
Well, they've got one. They did in the Kickstarter. I've got three of them. But you can get a little tiny Kaer Banog monster. Studio, it also has the horror section. In the horror section, you'll see the Universal Studio classics there. So you've got your Mummy and your Creature from the Black Lagoon, but you've also got modern ones like Mike Myers or Hellraiser, Leatherface. There's a particularly good one a bit further down where we've got one of them. So there's Marty Feldman's Igor, and then there is Gene's Young Frankenstein, not Frankenstein, which I just love. So
there's Mr. Lecter.
Oh, that joke, that flipping, oh, look at that clown.
Yeah, with the Tim Curry clown. So it's an absolute joy, because even if you're not planning on using them for a game, they're really nice just painting pieces, and there will be something in here that you are a fan of, because it covers so much pop culture, certainly 80s and 90s and modern day stuff. But there is his Turf War game, which is his version of The Walking Dead, essentially a little quick gang fight system where it's happened, gangs have sprung up, so you've got your Aryans, you've got your biker gangs or your Rastas, you've got, if you actually scroll back up, Justin, keep going, stop, see the Triad gang, click on that.
Yep, I'll open that in a new tab for you.
So if you've watched Big Trouble in Little China, you'll know that there was two gangs, one in red and one in yellow, and the red guys were bad guys, including the guy with the six shooters. So there you are. If you happen to have picked up...
glorious.
You know, it's all in the reflexes.
If you happen to have picked up a Jack Burton from elsewhere, there are several homages to characters on here played by Kurt, but not actually Jack Burton. So possibly one for the future.
Really digging these.
He's a talented, talented fella. There's Dirty Harry.
There's Donnie Montoya.
Yeah. If you scroll up a little bit, there's those dudes from Predator 2. Is it not? The Rastafarians, are they not from from the second Predator?
And if you look below them, the US Spec Ops team is the team from Predator.
Yeah.
Let me open that up for that's awesome.
This will make you a goddamn sexual Tyrannosaurus.
That is amazing. So, really good pick.
So Studio Miniatures, I would have a lot less money if his website worked perfectly the first time round. Mm-hmm. Because for a long time you couldn't order in Northern Ireland. We didn't exist on the map. So I had to email him directly. He's fixed that now. But but there would have been a time when I would have absolutely emptied my bank account.
So who's the chap behind us? His name's Stuart.
Stuart Hamilton.
Right, Stuart Hamilton. Hmm. While nobody's listening, I have a suggestion, okay? Can you do me some itty-bitty tiny Time Bandits, please? I would love the Time Bandits, man. That would be just amazing.
I have the Time Bandits over there.
No!
Jerry has everything.
Different company. Maybe it'll be the end of the week next week.
I was just going to say, that range of miniatures would be pretty awesome if you're going to be doing stuff with, like, the 7TV rules, because you could transfer a lot of that over into that, or take it and do stuff with, like, put the Pulp Alley or Pulp Figures rules as well. That could be kind of cool. So there's loads and loads of options for them. As we were looking through the ones before, those Holy Grail miniatures, or not Holy Grail miniatures, they look absolutely amazing. I absolutely love those.
They are.
As soon as they showed up, they're brilliant. So, yeah.
Well, there you go, guys. You can check it out at studiominiatures.com. I'm sure the guys, like all of us right now, would be very appreciative of a little bit of custom. So go and check them out. Amazing stuff. Right. It's time for Ben's News.
Coming to you from the center of Northwestern Europe. Covering board games, war games, card games, and all that you love. It's the news.
Okay, so the first bit of news we're actually going to be looking at is from Atomic Mass Games. Now, they're in the situation that a lot of different companies are at the moment, in that they are going to have to sort of like halt or sort of think about production during this whole coronavirus sort of outbreak at the moment. But it does mean that they're going to be dropping a whole bunch of new previews for us. And the first preview is for Marvel Crisis Protocol, and it's a new model that's going to be coming out, and that is for the Ghost Rider himself, Mr. Nicolas Cage. Yep.
Now, I wonder if it was going to be the Nicolas Cage one or the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. one.
Well, I suppose you can. I think this is meant to be slightly more themed around the comic book version of him, I believe, from what people said in the comments and stuff. But the interesting thing about this miniature is it's actually the first one, bar MODOK, who I guess flies around on a rocket chair all the time anyway, that actually comes mounted, as it were. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be very interesting to see whether or not they actually have this kit be one that is both a mounted version and potentially an on-foot version, because that could be quite interesting. Because obviously one of the big things about Marvel Crisis Protocol is that you can leap around across buildings and traverse things and all things very, very easily. So having the bike in the mix sort of changes the dynamics a little bit as well, which is very interesting.
I'm going to have to ask, okay?
Ask
because I enjoy the Marvel stuff. I've seen...
Yeah.
Almost all the Marvel movies, but cool. I haven't seen Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but like many people in the world, I'm nice to snag that Disney Plus deal for the year, and I think Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is on that. Okay. It is,
yeah. I will say, Warren, I have watched the entirety of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and I love it, because what it does is, as you're working on your way through the series, once in a while, it'll do like timeline tie-ins to the movies.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want it to do it, you could actually stop partway through the series of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., go watch the movie, the references, and then continue on.
Okay, yeah, because that's what I was wondering. And secondly, can I just confirm then, Ghost Rider is in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., yeah?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. He's in there.
He is.
Yeah. He's in one of the later seasons.
Did they snag Nicolas Cage to do it, though?
No.
No, it's a new Ghost Rider. It's a new Ghost Rider. But awesome. Honestly, it's a series that I really, really enjoyed. And it having those little movie tie-in moments really just made me go, oh, man, that's so cool.
The other cool thing that they've done, sort of like a little sort of bonus for everybody at this sort of period of time when everyone's sort of locked away and, you know, having to do a little hobby and that kind of thing, is that they've come up with the rules for the ultimate Hulk encounter scenario. They did one previously, which was all around Ultron. And so it was about two different teams trying to take on Ultron, who's been given mega power and everything, and he's been pumped up to the max. In this one, it's really interesting, and they've sort of twisted things a little bit. And so what's happened is the other warband on the table, or the other group of heroes and villains on the table, have been infused with gamma radiation, and it's made them go effectively Hulk out. So it's giving them a whole bunch of extra rules and strength. They can toss things around enough, a bit like the Hulk himself. And so the only person who can actually stop these heroes who have all been gamma-filled is the Hulk. And so you've now got it's like souped-up version of the Hulk that you can throw into the scenarios, and his whole deal is that he's actually trying to Hulk smash all of like everybody else around him and throw them into these sort of like gamma collector things to try and suck the gamma out of them. So it's a really fun little scenario. The guys at Atomic Mass Games, they tend to sit down and play through a bunch of these scenarios through Twitch and stuff like that. So you go and check them out on their social medias and stuff. You'll usually be able to go and see some gameplay, not necessarily just of, you know, this ultimate encounter, but loads of stuff from the past as well. So you can learn how to play with all the different characters like Thor and Vision and that kind of thing as well. So there's some really cool stuff.
That sounds so exciting. Can you imagine the Hulk sucking you back to normal?
Sucking the gamma out of you, Lloyd. Sucking that gamma out of you.
He's a big man.
Am I the only one remembering the gamma-infused poodle from the Eric Bana version of the Hulk?
Oh, God,
where
yes.
Where he has to fight a pack of gamma dogs. Yeah. At that point, you just go, what was that? Fallout. Fallout game with the big muty dog things. They all look like roided, hulked out gamma. Let's get those models. And
Did they turn green, or is it just the Hulk that turns green?
Oh, no.
They turned unusual, is what they
if
turned.
If you get gammaed, you turn green.
Yeah.
All we're waiting for is one of them gamma ray bursts to happen in a nearby star. Maybe Beetlejuice will give us one. We can all Hulk up.
Turn us all into superheroes.
You guys can catch up with my Hulk in
that. Orange Hulk. Look at that.
Oh, crap. I'm Burgundy Hulk.
Right. Star Wars, Ben. We've got some Star Wars updates, yeah?
Yeah, so again, in the same boat, companies are sort of locked away from being able to release anything new, but that doesn't mean they can't preview things. And so Fantasy Flight Games actually previewed some stuff for both the Galactic Republic, sort of like prequel side of things, and also for the sort of original trilogy and that kind of era as well. So the first set of releases, well, previews anyway, were for the Starp Riders. I'm going to call them Starp, but they're probably just, you know, STAP Riders. But I like Starp Riders, Starp. But anyway, you get a whole bunch of these in the set. These are very iconic droids from the original movies. I remember I got a massive kit of one of these that was about this tall, I'm going to say, something like that. So it's about as big as my face, and I was able to put that together and have fun with it. But if you like the droids and, you know, fighting for those guys, then you've got some really awesome stuff there for the Separatists. On the other side of things, for the clones, you've got the Republic AT-RT unit expansion also coming as well. So if you want to have a little bit of a weird dinky walker to walk around the battlefield on, then you've got some options there too. The thing I thought about this when I first saw it, surely you're just a massive target when you're running around on one of these. You know,
you got one of these in the original set, not really.
Yeah, but you're not really going very fast, are you? Or are you? I don't know.
They're nippy enough on the table.
Yeah, but anyway, I just thought to myself,
Ben. If we got you, right, and we managed to kind of shrink you down to the size of a goblin, a goblin, right? And then we stuck you on the back of a large, angry cock, right? And then we went, hoo-ah! And it went, and started running around.
Yeah.
If you were able to hold on, yeah, I would imagine that you'd be hard to hit.
That's probably true, yeah. I think if that image doesn't conjure up exactly how these things play in game, then Fantasy Flight Games have ruined something, really.
So, that's why catching a chicken is a challenge.
Are we now doing Honey, I Shrunk the Band?
No, but this is true. This is true. Look, me and Lloyd were down in England one time. We were on our way down to a meeting, okay? And we were driving along the motorway, and we saw this chicken, right? And this chicken was going hell for leather up the hard shoulder of the motorway, right?
That's true.
So you'll remember, Lloyd, I planted the foot and I thought, because I don't want it running out in front of me, otherwise I'll kill the chicken. So I planted the foot and went up. And the chicken looked at me and I looked at him. And then the chicken planted it and caught up and then started to kind of overtake me again. So I thought, well, I'm not having this. I'm not going to be beaten by a chicken. So I broke the law, and I planted my foot, and I went even faster. And I was bombing down the motorway. Okay?
What car was he in, Lloyd? We have got to figure out what kind of a bumblebee in a box he was running.
No, it was like a Fiesta type thing.
So we were bombing it down.
Bombing it was doing maybe, what, 60?
No. By this stage, I was breaking the law. So I'm not going to say any more than that, but I was breaking the law. Pure Judas Priest style.
Had skirts and all. It was amazing.
Not one of the tiny, shitty little Euro cars that's done up American racers.
I continued to bomb it down. I looked out my window. The chicken looked at me, and I looked at him, and then he bombed it again. And then this time, he took one of the slip roads off. So I said to Lloyd, We're going to go get him. Let's go get him. So we pulled off on the slip road, and he was bombing up this wee country road, okay? And I was ramming up and behind him, and then he ran into this farmyard, right? So we skidded into the farmyard, and I got out of the car, and this old farmer walked up. Hey, what you doing on my land, boy? And I said, well, we were chasing a chicken. It was booming up the motorway, so we were curious. I've never seen a chicken run so fast. And he says, ah, that'll be one of my three-legged chickens there, boy. And I went, three-legged chicken? He says, yeah, we created them for KFC. And I said, well, what do they taste like? And he says, don't know, we've never been able to catch one.
Oh, God.
Okay, no, moving swiftly on.
Warren, I'm going to say this once, mate. That was shit.
Okay.
He's so brutal. He's so hard to impress these days. Just getting too old. Too old. And grumpy.
Gray. I'm a grumpy old man now.
Are you sure that's gray? I thought that was just stainage.
So, what we've established here is that it's actually really good, Ben.
Yes, yeah, there you go. But yes. So, moving away from the prequels, there's also some stuff
you don't want to do that. You don't want to move away from the prequels yet. Just because we were talking about Disney Plus, if you want to see all this sort of stuff in action, check out Clone Wars on the Disney Plus, 7 seasons of it.
Yeah.
If you haven't been watching the Clone Wars one, watch Clone Wars. Don't watch Rebels.
Don't watch Rebels.
Ass balls. What's right.
Clone Wars.
But right. Anyway, yes. So now moving away from the prequels and looking towards a sort of original trilogy, I guess you'd say. We've also got two new unit expansions here. So you've got Clan Ren, which is,
from Rebels.
Synonymous from Rebels, which is, synonymous with Sabine Wren. So you've got some new options there. These have got, a whole range of different sort of specialized equipment and swords and pistols and stuff. They also have rockets on their jetpacks as well, which is always a big plus. And then on the other side of things, we've also got Inferno Squad. So this is a squad that was made popular through the Battlefront video games led by Iden Verso. And you can see there's a couple of the other named characters from that game within that set. And you've also got a whole bunch of other specialized weapons as well. So these are effectively like a sort of Black Ops style kill team within the Galactic Empire.
And Verso is already available. She was in
it. She is, yep. As is Sabine Wren, if you want to pick those characters up. So, yeah.
Cool.
Awesome. Right. What's going on in 40K and Games Workshop land then, Ben?
Cool, yeah. So over last
We're going
Saturday,
back to the farmyard at some point during this, I imagine, aren't we?
So during the last weekend, we had the first online preview from Games Workshop for what's coming, because obviously they couldn't do it at AdeptCon. this week because it was obviously cancelled, unfortunately. But this allowed them to go through all the different game systems and talk about what's coming up next. For the World of 40K, the first little preview was for an animated story that's going to be told alongside a bunch of other sort of stuff they've been working on in the background from the Warhammer Storyforge, which is called Hammer and Bolter, which is the anthology, and the show, the sort of the short within it called Death's Hand. Now, this has some really awesome looking artwork and sort of design and everything to it as well, which is really nice to see. And one of the cool things about it is that I think it steps away from, like, I like CGI when it's been done well, but I think that the world of Warhammer 40,000 works way better in hand-drawn animation, especially coming from like looking back in the past at stuff from like Inferno and their comics and stuff. And so seeing the new stuff that they've been working on here has been very, very cool indeed. And so it'd be nice to see how it all comes together, especially as part of this anthology, because we're probably going to get a whole bunch of different animation styles in the mix, which I think will be really cool. But that was the first sort of little preview that they've done already for that, which sounds really awesome. And it's nice to see Games Workshop doing something that's not just, you know, farming out their license to, you know, mobile games and stuff like that. So that's all good.
Farming.
On the other side of things, we've actually got some miniature previews as well.
Yep.
And so the first miniature was for the clone father himself. And that is Fabius Bile. I say Fabius Bile. Jerry says Fabius Bile. They say Fabius Bile. So there we go.
They'd be wrong. It's
Fabius. is it just me, or does it remind you of Viggo from Ghostbusters 2?
He does look like Viggo.
He does have a Viggo thing going on. Mm. Yeah.
The Scourge of Carpathia.
He's got more W.C. Fields thing going on with his alcoholic nose.
It's like you and Jerry, Justin. Justin and Jerry got together and had a love child. That's him. Right there. Yeah.
This does not need to be a thing on the internet, Lloyd, ever.
Oh, now, you know, mix the gene seeds, as Fabius would do.
That's it.
Don't cross the streams, goddammit.
Yeah, but this is a new model of him, sort of based on the original one, but given a little bit more of a tweak in the sort of proportions department to make it fit in line with the rest of the Primaris stuff that's out at the moment as well, for both Space Marines and the kind of Primaris-styled Space Marine stuff as well. And he's also going to be the main feature of the next Psychic Awakening book as well, so that's coming out very, very soon. Well, not soon, but in the near future anyway, and he will be the main character that sort of carries that forward, which will be interesting as well. As well as that, the guys at Forge World also released the one and only Lionel Johnson. So the Lion himself has been he's going to be released in the future for those people playing games set within the Horus Heresy. He comes with a couple of different options. So you can see the version here where he's got the winged helmet, which sort of puts him into that knightly stance and pose and stuff. But then you can also switch it out for a unhelmeted version. And there are also two blades. So he has the wolf blade, which you can see there. And then he also has the lion blade as well. And either of those come with different in-game rules that you can use to try and make him, you know, use it for different tactical situations and stuff as well. He also comes with that big scenic base, you see, as a lot of the other Primarchs do from the Horus Heresy collection. And they have, well, this one's focused obviously around a specific campaign and battle with the Night Lords insignia on the side of it. But they have said that you can sort of paint them however you want. So we're not sure whether or not they're going to be sort of like alternative shoulder pads in the set or something, because those actually look sculpted on there. But we'll see how that comes together. But another quite nice looking model for those people who love the Horus Heresy.
What type of Marines are those? Are those like the original small Marines getting cut down there?
Yeah, because it's in the Horus Heresy, so it's way back before Primaris existed, Lloyd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Primarchs are big boys.
Oh, yeah. They are freaking... They're bigger than Primaris.
For no reason. I like the old days where they just didn't bother with that embiggening nonsense.
Mm-hmm. Embiggening's all the style now, Jerry.
How do you know he's better? He's bigger.
That's easier for you to say.
It ruins the meeting between the Emperor and Russ. The first time Rusk meets the Emperor, it's a little weedy guy, and he goes, "I'll drink more than you," and drinks more, lifts a barrel over his head and drinks it all, so the Emperor's got nothing. And he goes, "I can, you know, lift more than you," and he lifts the whole thing, and he does all these impressive physical feats. Then he offers to fight the Emperor, and the Emperor just lifts a power fist and goes bang on top of his head and knocks him out cold, the first person to beat him. Now, if they're all human size, that's impressive. If one of them's the size of a castle and the other one's the size of a tower, that less impressive, and all the humans should be going, "Why did we not murder these ogre babies in the fields when we found them?"
Yeah,
just makes no sense.
This is a fair point.
Very true.
Okay,
Oh, yes. I'm powered up for this one. Yeah.
Are we ready for this? Right. Are we ready for this?
Yeah. So, as well as some stuff for the world of 40K and the Grimdark Future, there was also some new previews for what's coming for the Age of Sigmar and the Mortal Realms. Yeah. And the first of these is surrounding the newest faction, which is going to arrive, called the Lumineth Realm Lords.
Yeah, boy!
And these are some of the big monstrous characters that the elves are going to call on. And so this is Avelinor, the Stoneheart King. And both this character and the other one that is shown in this preview are mountain spirits that have been sort of pledged themselves alongside Teclis in order to fight the good fight for the forces of order and banish chaos back to whence it came. So they are massive, huge, titanic creatures about the size of giants, maybe a little bit longer, bigger. They said that they can take on bloodthirsters with ease, which sounds quite interesting. And yeah, whatever you think of the models, make of it as you will.
I'm not
the first stuff we have ever released for Age of Sigmar.
It doesn't really.
We have literally reached the stage where I was speechless because I couldn't work out what I was looking at. Right. So we play with toy soldiers, right? So ultimately we expect these things to go into battle. All right. We have literally, with this release, it's like a release of ornaments. It's not like a release of soldiers at all. You know, you would still like to see some practicality to them. I can't even get my head around the various...
Bonsai Mountains.
Yeah, the various aspects that have been integrated into this. Like the rock on his back... You know, you could call him, the Stoneheart King, right? But it didn't mean you had to put stone, actual rock, a mountain on his back. You know, it's almost as if the
is this called the Stoneheart King then.
Yeah, it's almost
that's
as if
interesting.
It's got so literal to the point of that it's lost. It loses credibility in my eyes as a force that would go into battle. Do you know what I mean? I look at it and I just can't get my head around it at all.
Yeah, the bonsai trees are really weird.
The thing that I think is interesting about this, because I've been studying these for maybe about a week now, trying to be like, is it bad?
Bring it back, good? Justin. Bring it back. I want to see more of it.
And the thing, that I came to the conclusion of is that with sort of a lot of other fantasy worlds, say you're looking at something like Tolkien or whatever, et cetera, like that, a lot of it seems quite grounded, even though it's quite high fantasy. But with this, they've effectively gone, how off the charts can we go with the designs in order to try and create something unique? And I can understand that. Whether or not it works is a different thing entirely. But over the days, I've actually started to quite like these particular mountain spirits. I actually think they're quite cool. It's some of the other stuff that I'm not too sure about with the Lumineth Realm Lords, or the Elves, as we want to call them. But
let's see those.
Specifically, if you look down further, you've got the Alarith Stone Guard.
Yeah, these are rocking. I love these.
No. What is that on their heads?
I loved it
until I realized they were all attached to a cow.
Yeah, I liked all of these. I liked everything about these, apart from the tops of their helmets.
Which we can fix. We got snippets,
like,
lads.
But, and so I was like, you could just turn them into proper conical helms for the elves of the old world.
You shouldn't. Right, here's the thing, right? Surely somebody in the design team went in there and said, look, I appreciate the creativity you're putting into this. I appreciate the out-of-the-box thinking you're putting into this. But remember, these guys do have to go into battle and fight.
Yeah.
So what, do you think this is a design run-up?
I can seriously see some very easily broken necks wearing helms that.
Mm. I've loved about this entire thing that Jerry has just been seething with anger as well.
I'm more bemused than angry. I mean, if you take a look at the stone things, the mountain bonsai tree people.
Yes.
So they can't swing their hammers over their head because there's no way they can raise their arms. So that's just a design thing. But it's...
Whoa. I know why they don't need to raise... Like, they're going to swing down. They're basically playing...
Yeah, but
not to fight a bloodthirster.
Look at them tiny little spindly legs holding up that mountain on the top. You know, it's like it's the proportions.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. If you looked at a giraffe's legs, they're spindly.
You wouldn't want to fight a giraffe, mind you. maybe that's honestly what the elves do. But the hammers aren't actually hammers for the elves. The hammers are there to hold them up while they fight like a giraffe. At your necks. But it's very deliberate because at no point were high elves ever connected to cows.
No.
At no point. So no. They've gone eagles, dragons, sea monsters, phoenix, all of the white lions. Mm-hmm. That's no all darn. Scraped to one side. So they had to go through and go, what animals are left? How can we? Because it's a noticeable, this is no longer a high elf faction. This is the ilfs or elves or whatever.
These are now called the battle cattle. I've even worked out their motto, okay? When they go into battle, they all shout, "Let's get moving!"
Knew something like that was coming.
Yeah.
I'm going to do that on any gaming table I ever see these on. I'll be going, "Let's get moving!"
See, it's
your maneuver.
I just feel a real disconnect with the creature that's in beneath this to the design of the armor. It just looks so goddamn desperate between the two.
I didn't even know there was a creature in it, man. I can't get past the
Do you
the
not
mountain.
See the hair?
So can we go? Is there any more battle cattle to look at further down?
Your main problem is, Justin, then, you can't see these naked. Is that it?
No, the creature below. Looks really rough.
Are you looking for the udders, Justin? Are you looking for the udders? Eh?
Really, that's too bold, Warren.
That's so, utterly despicable, man.
So the other preview that was considered quite favourably, however, is if you scroll down, there's a new warband for the World of Warcry, and is the Scions of the Flame.
Kill the fire. Fire! Yeah.
So these are a new warband that are going to be added into the mix, and they worship an aspect of chaos which is all about burning and immolation, if you couldn't tell from their design.
Fire.
They herald from the realm of Akshi, which has had a lot of action, over the last couple of months and stuff, as a lot of the campaigns and things have been set within that realm as well. But I think these are all really good-looking models, some really nice stuff that sort of builds on the idea of different aspects of chaos within the world of Age of Sigmar. Some really cool stuff in there. Could easily be converted and turned into something for use in things like Necromunda as well if you wanted to, which is very cool. And of course, these kind of models, as they do for Warcry, will be available for both that skirmish game and then have rules to be ported into Age of Sigmar proper as well.
If you hadn't told me they were chaos, I could have looked at those and went, some form of human Sigmarite faction.
Yeah.
Redemptionists for 40K. It's just, they're one step away from the Twin-Tailed Comet.
Yeah, and that's one kind of Witch Hunter's warband, maybe.
Yeah, and that's one of the interesting things about what they've done with a lot of the stuff for Warcry, is that while you've had a couple of warbands which are very much like, that is obviously a chaos faction, like the ones that came in the first set, so the Untamed Beast and the Iron Golems, you've got ones like these, and you've got the ones that live in the Realm of Light, which the name of which I cannot quite remember, that look like they could be from either an elven faction or an order faction or something like that. And I love the idea that chaos is bubbling beneath the surface almost.
The difference, Ben, right? You look at them. Yeah, there's a couple of weird bits of the flaming stuff out the back that maybe a little bit impractical. But on the whole, you can see those guys fighting.
Whereas the battle cattle,
they look like they're about to go into a Mardi Gras parade. it's they don't look ready for battle. They look like they're there to parade.
Let's
and
see
to
him against us.
Lloyd's loving the battle cows.
The small ones, the battle cows.
Oh, that's the best thing ever released. I love
garbage. Absolute garbage.
Do you know what?
But everything, from the cow horns down.
For the regular troops, if they didn't have cows on the top of their heads, I probably would say that's my favorite thing ever released.
Yeah, I really like it. The hammers, well, elves, some do have a big hammer. But those top bits on those helms are ridiculous. It's and tassels, flipping tassels as well. You know, like you turn around and look and you get swapped in the face with a tassel.
Don't do that, Lloyd.
We'll clip the tassels. Anyway, right. I want to bring a wee little bit of sense, of normality back to the things, okay? Because we're all doing these kinds of screen and screen kind of things. But we've got a jerry can for you this week. We're going to pull one of our jerry cans out from the archives for you guys, just to give you something that will that goes back to the way things were. Jerry, what can you do this week?
Hey Cogs, I'm back again with a couple of different pieces that all sort of work in conjunction from Green Stuff World, and this time I'm really going to be having a look at the Green Stuff World textured ruler pins, which are good for scenery and basing. This is a nice cobblestone one for 28mm, but there are a few other bits and bobs that can be used in conjunction with them. So first things first, how to use this. Again, it uses a form of epoxy putty or clay, so can use Milliput, any of the three variants. You can use Green Stuff, you can use Sculpty, Super Sculpty, DAS, whatever. You just want something that will take an impression and keep it when you're done. I have here a little ball of putt-putt that I've already put together. I'm just going to flatten it out a bit. This is just so I don't end up covered in white, because I will end up covered in white. If you have some greaseproof paper or cling film, you can put that down to save your worktop. I'm just going to start to roll it out between these two pieces of greaseproof paper, just so I get my base. That should be about that. There we go. Now, if you're eagle-eyed, you may notice the end of these. They've got little rolling rings on them. You can actually get a set of three, and they come at 1mm, 2mm or 3mm, which means you can maintain a consistency in the level. If you're doing a pavement, for example, or if you want to do a larger piece or multiple bases and you want them all to be the same size, having those little things on them are quite handy, because it means you've got a consistent level the whole time. But once you've got them on and you've got your 2mm or 3mm or whatever it happens to be, you can just pop them off the end of the clear pin and then find your textured one and pop them either end. And once they're on, that means you're back to the same 2mm gap. Now, depending on what you're using, you may need to prevent it from sticking to the texture on this. With Milliput, you can use water, but it's water soluble, so it will start to clog up these textured rolling pins. So you can use some Sculptor's Vaseline, which is a delightful blue colour. In this case, I'm just going to get some on a brush and brush it across the top. And you don't need a huge amount of this. But once you've finished making your bases or your terrain, you need to leave it to cure completely, and then this will have to be washed off before you can apply any paint to it. And then all we need to do is come across and keep a good, firm, consistent. That's what I get for doing it on paper here. And when you're done, you'll get a little piece like that. Or, if you're clever and you've done it onto bases in advance, we've got a couple here. And again, I just want to do a bit of Vaseline over the top of this. Just to prevent it sticking and lifting. And that one's on a 2mm. This one is a bit thicker, so I'm probably going to do a 3mm on this. And we'll just see how it turns out. You don't need to have the little spacer rings on it, but theoretically, this should make life much easier for you. So there's one. And I'm just going to quickly flip those off and flip on the larger pieces. Try it again on the 25mm base. And as simple as that, we've got two cobblestone bases. I've even done one here in green stuff. So you can see it doesn't matter what the putty is or what the clay is that you're using it with. You'll get the same sort of thing every time. Now, if you're doing these larger, you can glue them on top of a base afterwards and trim them down. And if you're using something like Milliput, you can carve and file that. Or Green Stuff World have actually done sets of cutters. They've done oval cutters for the sort of standard size bases you would get in Age of Sigmar and 40K. They've also done round cutters. And these are nice for two reasons. One, it tells you the sizes on the lid. So we go from 22mm up to 60mm. Secondly, they come at unusual sizes, and the unusual sizes are, for example, this one here is a 22mm. Not many people do a 22mm base, but anybody who owns a Games Workshop 25mm base, because the plinth is 25, the top isn't. So when I made this, I actually use the 22mm to cut it out, because you've got that beveled edge on them. So it's the same with the 40mm base. I actually use a 38mm at the top. And again, with these, you just need to lubricate them. So it could be water, or in this case, you can pop it into a bit of Vaseline. And I just roll it back and forward and pull it out. And then line up where you want to go. And just like a cookie cutter, press down, and then I would peel this away before I lifted that cutter out. Get rid of the pastry base. That comes off, and then this should be able to pop straight out if I've added enough Vaseline, and I have. And it saves all the detail and saves you your cutter as well. So that's the Green Stuff World textured rolling pin and accessories for all your basing needs.
Even more news, bitches.
Yeah, we're back for more of Ben's news. Mm. Jerry, thank you for that, man. You make us feel normal for those few minutes where we get to listen to your sultry tones.
Well, that's what I aim for.
Play with your rolling pins and stuff, man. Love it. Love it. Okay, Ben, what else is going on in the world, man? I'm surprised we still have news at this stage. You know, I was thinking everybody would just go, do you know what? Reset. Going to just go home, going to lie in my bed, and then I'll wake up New Year's Eve in 2021. But no, I mean, people are still burrowing on. So.
Yeah, I've still got burrowing on.
No.
Okay, set the clock. Okay. Right.
Okay, so yeah, so the next bit of news we're going to be looking at is from the guys at Modiphius, and they have made all of, mostly, the rules available for free for Elder Scrolls Call to Arms. Mm-hmm. So they've made the digital versions of the core rules, Escape from Helgen, and also a print and play dice set completely free. You have to pay about $5 for the quest book.
How do you print dice? Oh, is this like the little stickers to stick on your dice or what?
Yeah, so it's like a little tiny like paper craft thing that you put together and then you can put around dice effectively.
Whenever I was doing this, I literally just cut these out and just super glue them on the side of dice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You can do that too. Yeah. So the
or print them or print them on a
Or maybe print them onto dice.
Sticker on a No. Print them onto a sticky sheet. Sticky
yeah.
paper.
Oh, yeah. That'd be good. There are some out there that do blank dice.
Yeah, you get. Well, you don't even need blank dice. You just get an A4 sticky page. You want some label paper, but A4. Run it through your printer and just cut it out, peel them off, and just stick them onto any dice you want.
So the core rules set that comes as part of this digital download package comes with everything you need in order to sort of learn how to play the game. So it comes with all the basics in terms of the mechanics and that kind of thing, how you build war bands and that kind of stuff as well, and take them out into the game. One of the big things about Call to Arms that we've talked about before on the show and in the news and stuff as well is that it can be played in multiple different formats, so it can either be played solo, which is obviously great for nowadays, and cooperative as well, and it can also be played in a versus mode too, so it can be done in a fashion where you both take control of warbands or maybe leaders in a Dovahkiin or something like that, and you fight against each other on the tabletop. Escape from Helgen is their little tiny sort of tutorial guide to the game, so it doesn't dive straight in and teach you about all the sort of more intricate mechanics of Call to Arms, but instead sort of guides you through the process, a little bit like a tutorial, a bit like the Escape from Helgen in the video game of Skyrim. So it's a really nice sort of intro way to dive into the game, and it's the kind of thing that you might see them running at conventions and stuff in the future as well, which would be very cool. The next book, which is the quest book, is the one that you have to pay, I think it's about £4.50-ish for or something in old English pounds, or about $5. And this comes with a bunch of scenarios for you to play. So it comes with a whole bunch of scenarios for solo, cooperative, and the versus modes. So it's the way for you to dive into the game and start playing through a little bit of a campaign with your friends and stuff as well on the table, which is neat. And then, of course, you've got the print and play dice set. This is all sort of... in aid of the fact that at the moment, a lot of companies, including Modiphius, can't really ship out a lot of the physical products for a lot of their ranges. And even though the game is going to be released properly in May, later this year, this is just a chance for you to dive in, download these things for free, give them a read, and see what you think of them. You can, of course, take the stuff that you know, all the rules from the books, use the miniatures you already have in your collection and start playing the game. There are a few sort of additional extras and accessories that you might need to try and find, or sort of mock up maybe, so some cards and things, but the basics of how everything works are effectively in those books for you to give the game a go and see what you think as well. So not a bad little package, really.
Mm-hmm. There we go. On the topic of free,
yes,
Frostgrave, their core rules and solo expansion also went up for free this week.
Yeah, so Osprey Games have released the digital versions, again, not physical versions, but the digital versions of the Frostgrave core rules. So if you want to dive in and play this absolutely monumental game by Joseph McCullen, then you can go and do that right now. Download this, start up your warbands, and start playing the game for yourself, delving into the ruins of Felstad in search of treasure and monsters and fame and all kinds of things like that. The sort of premise behind Frostgrave, and no one's heard of it before, is that it's a little bit like a skirmish game of old where you play as a wizard. You create a wizard character and a school of magic that they sort of delve into. And then you hire a bunch of sort of minions or hirelings or companions, if you want to be nice, and use them going off on adventures against other people.
Minions.
Minions seems like the best thing to do, I think, for a lot of people. Yeah, especially if you're a necromancer. I think minions seems to be a good
minions. Base level. Or henchmen.
Ben. Chronomancer every single time in this game. I love
them.
They
do have some quirky spells, the Chronomancers, yeah. Another really cool thing they've done is that there was a small sort of expansion for Frostgrave called Dark Alchemy, which actually allowed you to play a bunch of solo and cooperative scenarios. And so that now is also available for free. So that's a little tiny version for you to download. And on top of that as well, they've also put together...
There's more.
They've put together a preview of their complete solo rules set, which is called Perilous Dark. So you can download the preview for that and have a read through and see what you think, because that's full of stuff in there for proper solo and cooperative gameplay on the tabletop if you want to dive in properly. And that also obviously has digital versions as well as physical ones for later on down the line.
Cool. If you're looking for the links for this, then they're on our site, are they?
Yeah, they're all on our site, so you'll be able to follow through from the show notes and everything like that to go and get those. They do come up on on their web store as with a price, but as soon as you get through to the sort of checkout, just put in the code that you'll find in the story, and you can use that to go and download all these goodies for yourself. A big thing to say as well is that the stuff that they've done for this is really cool, because they could have put together the idea of doing things where you have, like, you know, a wizard versus another wizarding warband. But what they've done is that because that would be a little bit too complicated and maybe a little bit weird and the AI might just, you know, gank you at every opportunity, they've done it so it's a pure against the game experience, against monsters and weird things and stuff in the background. So it's a really nice game to dive into and actually play properly cooperative or solo with some friends. And I've played a couple of games of Frostgrave, not nearly enough games, but it's definitely up there as one of my favorites. Very cool system. So.
Sounds right. Amazing.
Our buddies over at War Cradle, okay, I blame them for this whole epidemic thing because they resurrected Mythos, and the very week that they did it, the whole world went. and then they have just come out, and I shit you not, you're going to love this. They have released the Path of Corona Zone. This is the Demon Corona Zone. That we're going to get to fight. Actually, it's a bunch of beautiful miniatures. Check these out. So this is a new set. It's all got that Lovecraftian feel that the Mythos world has. Just look at them.
So this is a nice new set that comes in their sort of traditional sort of awesome resin that they do for these kind of games and stuff in this range. And it takes things a little bit away from the more traditional kind of Lovecraftian thing you may have thought of before and move towards a little bit more of a dark and sinister, almost kind of, if you think about it on sort of like an equal term, like Malifaux style thing, which I think is really neat. But then with a couple of different twists here and there to make it even more dark and gritty and weird. Like there's a lot of hooks and weird claws on display here, which makes them very interesting.
What I like about it is it almost has the vibes of Del Toro. Whenever Del Toro took on Hellboy 2, right? With the two elven protagonist kind of jobbies in it.
Yes.
If you look back at this, Justin keeps clicking off these things. So bring it up.
Well, I thought people would want to see you talking. I thought you were about to
Nobody
go
wants
on
to
one.
See me when there's beautiful to be looked at. But look at the. Do you see the chests and the details and I really like this. I really like this.
Now, if anyone's interested, before this game was resurrected, we actually did a Let's Play on it, and the game system was actually super, super fun. It should still be up on the site. I'm not sure if War Cradle have updated the rules just yet.
Okay, that's what I'm wondering. If they have, I'm sure that they won't have changed too much.
They normally keep the core engine of a game, and they just shoot it up, you know, which really works well.
Are these Wild West Exodus type scales then?
Yes.
They're all wax bases.
Yeah, they're scaled to the sort of scale that you would have from a lot of their other ranges. So a lot of the stuff they've done for kind of Wild West Exodus, as you say.
But if I remember correctly, Mythos was slightly on the larger end of scale anyway, wasn't it?
Yeah, so, I mean, like I have a set of the Priory at home, and they're slightly bigger.
Yeah, so it's
it's grand. It all fits in.
One of the cool things about this sort of range as a whole, anyway, is that they've really done some nice stuff in terms of like updating the sculpts just slightly. So there's a lot more. They've taken a lot of the stuff that originally came out when the game first released, and then they've taken those models and tried to make them a little bit more dynamic in places. Added a couple more details here and there, just to sort of go along with their sort of you know sculpting techniques and their methods as well. The old models still work. You obviously need to get the new cards stuff, so that's a perfectly viable opportunity as well.
I still have my old set of the Priory, and I'm really looking forward to actually seeing how this game now runs. And I think we actually may have got a delivery of some of these, so if I get the chance in the coming weeks, I will unbox these.
Happy days. Yeah, definitely want to see them. Right, Jerry, we have something cool, man. Little Wars.
Things, yeah.
Paper Boys edition. So this is going back to the Little Wars book by H.G. Wells.
It is, but for some reason they didn't use the full original title. I can't understand why that could be.
And what was the full original title?
The full original title for Little Wars was A Game for Boys from 12 to 100 or something like that.
Yeah.
And for the more intelligent sort of girl who likes the boys
Nice.
Yeah. But for whatever reason, they chose not to run with that. But this is Peter Dennis's take on it. Mm-hmm. So these are essentially the first published War Games rules that we ever had from Mr. Wells, where he had the Army of Red fighting the Army of Blue, and Peter Dennis has redid these cut down rules with his paperboy figures in a nice chunky 54 mil. So perfect scale for cutting out, sticking down and playing on your floor, because that was what H.G. Wells was all about. It was playing big battles on your floor, not tabletop. Tabletops are too small.
Just
push everything aside and go for it. There are tripods in there. There's a little addendum that H.G. Wells obviously never thought about whenever he did Little Wars, because it was very Napoleonic feel and historically accurate. But when Peter got the chance to do this, he decided to take H.G. Wells' second best-known book after Little Wars, with the tripods there, and so there are Martians at the back.
I love me a bit of tripod action.
Hmm. There's some great touches in this as well. You've got things like
Is this a digital product?
No,
Jerry.
Is it
die cut?
No.
You have to actually sit and
Am I having to cut my figures out of the book?
Yeah.
That's
the whole point of these things. But in fact, if you get into some of Peter's stuff, they have long debates about what the best type of scissors are to use and stuff, and the best way to glue your stuff together, and Modge Podging spears and stuff.
And you can play in legacy mode as well, because you can just pick up your man and go, you're dead.
Did Peter not recently team up with Wufun?
He did, yes.
Yeah. Getting his art onto the little acrylic.
Onto the acrylic.
Yeah, we did a story on that.
Could we not get Wufun into this? Because that would be amazing.
I think it's going to come down to what is owned by what, because that's Peter Dennis's work published by a company. Mm. Whereas the guys in Romania, when they did the acrylic, is Peter Dennis's own stuff off his own website. Mm. Yeah. So that is his own sole property. So I don't know whether or not.
Surely a deal could be made.
It depends whether or not the company wants to let another company produce the exact same thing again in another format. Because I assume a lot of companies will go, no, it's ours. If anybody's selling it, it's going to be us and not you. Companies are weird like that, you know. But yeah, it's good crack. It's not just all flat figures either, because there's cannon that are real firing, because that's how you play this game. You make your little paper cannon, you roll out your little tube, you put an elastic band in it with a piece of match to hold it in place, then you pull it back and launch, and whing, off goes your cannonball.
So the Wufun guys are out in Romania, yeah?
Yes.
Here he comes, right. Granny Matchmaker Warren.
Okay, right. I've got a special message for the Wufun guys out in Romania. Chapula man, piece of money. Go and get that license from Peter Dennis and make them, man. It'd be awesome. We could all Little Wars to our heart's content.
See, I'm laughing because now Ryan's going to have to go and translate Romanian.
No.
I thought so.
No, we won't.
Let me help everybody out there.
I knew it.
That's just a little something special between me and my Romanian buddies out there. If anybody wondered, the Romanians told me it was okay.
I was just going to also say that on top of that Little Wars book, and the Dennis is obviously illustrated there, that's part of a series that also is, well, it used to be available on Amazon, or it seems to be completely sold out nowadays anyway.
Yeah.
He actually did a whole bunch of different books that were tied to specific periods.
So
he did one which was tied around 1066, and inside the book was an entire Viking and an entire Saxon army. I think it was Vikings and Saxons army that you could play out the battles of that era. And there's one for the War of the Roses as well, I believe.
There's the Peninsular War, and I don't think he did Waterloo because it'd be a bit much, but there's a Peninsular War one if people want to do their Spanish and British and against the French there. In Napoleonics. But
so those
they've
books
done
do exist
out there.
So they are good to go and pick up and play around with, especially if you've got sort of like people that you want to sit down and, you know, do something crafty for a little while, maybe when you're in isolation with younger children or something, get them cutting things, but obviously with safety scissors.
Safety scissors.
Okie dokie. Right. This week, we managed to get our hands on the digital rulebook for Oathmark, Battles of the Lost Age. Jerry, Ben, you guys got a chance to have a look through it. Can you lead us through it a little bit so as we can get a feel for what we're looking at?
Oh, we certainly can.
Yeah.
Do you want to kick off, Benjamino? Do we want to? Yeah. Well, if people haven't heard of Oathmark, I'm assuming they've not been on our website because they've been quite a lot by Oathmark over the past week/month. But it's an unusual one in that it sits between a small scale skirmish game and a massive mass battle game, because the brief was they could take one of the Frostgrave Oathmark boxes, because they started production for a plastic range well in advance of the actual rules. But the idea was one of these boxes, and the boxes are always 30 men or 30 infantry. I think we're starting to put cavalry out now at 15s. But one box would be enough to play a game. That, you know, your army could just be this one box. So the rules go from 30 guys aside up to much bigger than 30 guys aside. So, and it's a agnostic background, but it's fantasy. So yes, you've got your humans, elves, goblins, and the like, and dwarves.
Couldn't don't be great for this. Some elves with cows on their heads.
Oh,
no. Before anyone worries, the sort of main premise of a lot of the aesthetic behind this game, especially, has been looking back at kind of Tolkien-esque versions of these fantasy races. So a lot of the models that you see, a lot of the artwork for the game as well, even some of the beasts have been sort of drawn from that kind of Tolkien-esque aesthetic and background. So for example, they're dragons. A lot of them don't have wings and they're more like worms from Nordic mythology and that kind of thing. Yeah, so as you can see by the cover, you've got a good look there of some elves going, elves and dwarves going up against humans and goblins. And this is one of the key
that
selling points.
That looks like the cow banner.
It's one of the key selling points of Oathmark as a whole, is that you don't have to make an army that is entirely based up of elves or dwarves or goblins, orcs or humans. You can mix and match all of that together. And we'll go into that in a little bit more detail later, but it means that everything is available to you at every kind of moment.
Let's start scrolling, Justin.
Yeah. So that's a prime example there. The fact that you're not restricted, you're not playing an elf army. There is a background, not fully fleshed out yet, but there's a background that there were massive empires and realms that were drawn together, but these have shattered and now people are coming back together and trying to build and carve out their own little empire, which is what you're doing when you're playing Oathmark. Yeah. You're trying to build your realm, and so part and parcel of that is who's on your lands and who can you get in to support you. So you can, if you want, go, I just want to play dwarves, or I just want to play elves, and that's perfectly fine. And you'll find that you get a very small elite army like you would expect with an elf or a dwarf. But you can go, I want to play elves, but I want a lot of chaff. How many goblins can I fit in this army as well? And you know what, actually, those dwarves with the two-handed weapons and the massive armor, they're a bit beefy. Yeah. They're going to take a lot of kicking. I'm going to have some of them as well. And you can do all of you can, you know, you can mix and match to your heart's content. So it's...
Have you got a particular page number?
Yeah, let's go to...
Page 12.
We'll jump into the mechanics itself.
Yeah, sure, we'll talk about that first. Yeah.
And first off, that's the very important thing there. See where it says dice? Mm. You know, scroll the ray because he's way past it.
Well, it was on page 11, you said 12.
Yeah, no, but while it came up there, and we see it, key right there, slap bang in the middle of what you need, is D10, because this is not a D6 system.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't use buckets of dice either. You generally cap out at like 5 dice. Even for full units.
Yeah, but I was having a read. Whenever you're figuring out your combat pulls, it's your stat times the number in your front row, they were saying.
So depending on what it happens to be, if it's a large creature, it might have a attack stat of 3 or something like that. Mm-hmm. But you only have 3 in a front row, and then if you only cap at 5, so regardless. Mm-hmm. But then they'll have other ways to motivate themselves. So yeah, so it's a D10 system. You may progress.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. And here we see the stat line. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, activations. Not everything will always get to activate the way you want it to. And I think that's very interesting as well.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because...
Go on.
Because otherwise I'll talk all day.
Yeah, so one of the key things in the game is that it's all trying to simulate that kind of fantasy warfare, but also throwing in that kind of fog of war mechanic that you see a lot of historical games also use. And so that activation set as Jerry was saying, sort of ties into each of the different units. So each of them have a value. In the case of the human soldier, it's 5. And what you do when you're going to activate a unit is you roll 2 dice, and if at least one of those numbers is equal to or above than that number, then you get to do a full activation with that unit. If you don't, then they have a much more reduced pool of actions that they can sort of do during the turn. This then can be sort of played around and tweaked by additional options within your army. So you have commanders and such like that, that will allow you to almost have like this sphere of influence on the table. And so they'll be able to sort of activate maybe 3 or 4 units at a time, but then also throw in an additional dice into that. So instead of it just being 2 dice and trying to get that number, you're rolling 3 dice, and so the chances are a little bit higher. This obviously means that you've then got armies that are very vastly different as well. So unruly goblins are, as you might imagine, unruly and hard to control. So they're going to be running around the battlefield doing whatever the hell they want. But then you've got things like more ordered elves or dwarves that are much more stoic and resolved. And so they know exactly what to do at the right time without the need for their commanders and stuff.
Is there a page to go to see like...
Yeah, so if you go to page 82, you'll see a whole bunch of the sort of unit entries and stuff that they've got for the game.
Yeah, well, there's only one.
Good enough. Close. You're so close.
If you start to scroll through, you should be able to get to the army lists shortly after that.
So,
An interesting thing on the activation is if a unit activates and fights a melee combat, then its opponent fights back.
Yes.
But they count as activated. So you can, if you're in a position, because you're not activating your whole army in one go, you're activating unit about. If there's a prime elite unit of hard-hitting dwarves or elves or whatever it happens to be looking down the flank of one of your good units, at that point, rather than waste turn trying to maneuver and turn and not actually be able to fight with your elite unit that turn, instead you can just throw something terrible, like throw a unit of goblin bowmen into the elite unit, tie them up in a round of combat for a turn. You might not do any damage, you might get killed, but then that unit's blocked from attacking you this turn. So tactically, there's an awful lot of options in there as well. It's not just a straight push it forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That sort of ties into an interesting sort of element of the game that I think is important to bring to the fore. And it's something that came up in the questions when we did our preview a couple of weeks ago, is that like a lot of people were like, is this a tactical game? And I said, categorically, yes, because there's that kind of back and forth between you and the other player. And so thinking about exactly what to activate at the right time and getting into a position where you can maneuver them to do charges and that kind of thing takes it back to that kind of old style of Warhammer Fantasy battles a lot of people really liked. And it sort of brings it to the fore, but in a lot more of a simple concept with Oathmark, which I think is really nice. Like a lot of the base mechanics of the game are very, very simple. As you know, Jerry and Justin were saying, you've got that core pool of dice that is maybe around 5, can go up to about 7, maybe if you've got champions in your regiments and that kind of thing as well. And you basically roll those, compare your fight or your shoot, if you're going to be shooting, against the enemy's defense, minus it away, and that's your target number. And that kind of just simplifies that. You've just hit that unit. The thing that then makes all this kind of mechanic of fighting and combat easier is the way that then all those hits are resolved. So if you then hit that target number, you've done effectively a health point to the unit, a wound to the unit. If you beat that by 5 or by 10, then you do extra damage to the unit, and then the game has unit sort of model removal. So you'll then remove them from the back of units and that kind of thing. So it's a very quick and easy system that it's basically like, look at what your number is that you need to hit, hit that number, and then you remove models straight away afterwards, basically. So it's really quick and easy to play, which means that you can play those larger scale battles that we were talking about at the start, as well as quick and easy skirmishes at the same time.
What about spell casting in this? Is there much in the way of spells and magic?
Yeah, so if you go to page 173, you got to look at the spells here. So spellcasting is sort of reduced to mages within your armies. They can have different levels. So for every level of wizard you have, it costs you more points to include them in your game, but it also allows them to take more spells. Spells are just done using a simple system, using the activation. I think there's a casting number for each spell, I believe.
We can see them on screen here.
So you basically get that, and they have a myriad of different effects. There are still those kind of traditional large-scale spells in there, like Fireball and that kind of thing. But a lot of the spells that they've actually included within the game have a lot more of a utilitarian sort of feel to them, and they're more like about boosting units and making them faster or giving them extra defense and that kind of thing. So the magic is still definitely there, but it's not like the kind of game-breaking stuff that used to be in sort of Warhammer Fantasy Battles back in the day and that kind of thing. So.
Mm-hmm. And then one of the big things then about this game is the kingdom building aspect of it. So if you can like round it out by just giving me a brief explanation of how the kingdom side of things work.
So I'll let you have a go at that, Jerry.
Yeah. Okay. So the way it works when you're building your force, you start with a central area, which is your kingdom, central city, keep, castle, whatever way you want to portray it, and it tells you what is available for you. Mm-hmm. And then you can choose or roll up additional outer areas. And this essentially builds a very generic map of your kingdom. So if you have forests, then you may have access to elves and trolls. Or if you have a...
Is this the stuff on page 78, is it?
Yeah.
So
you see, build up essentially layers. You're going to have, I think... a minimum of 3 rings, and there you go, there's the dwarf train list. So some of these will double up. So everybody will always start with a city, which will give you your heroes, your leader, your king of your kingdom, plus some of his elites. They're always going to be in there. Then other bits and pieces are limited in the amount that you can have. So even though the next outer ring contains 3 areas that you can fill, only 2 of them could be forges if you wanted to play a very champion heavy.
Let's find the page for this, because I don't think is it 189?
I think it's right at the very back. It's essentially like a roster list. Yeah.
Yeah. So 189 gives you the kingdom sheet, and I'll show you the kind of. Yeah. It's effectively like when you used to have those big kind of warband sheets for your skirmish games and that kind of thing. So.
And the interesting thing about it is, if we're playing a campaign, so I'm playing against Ben. And we both started with, say, 3 rings there. You can see the first is your central part, is your keep, your city. That's your opponent's capital you're looking to get to. That you've got 2 and then 3. So if we're playing 3 rings out, you've got 5 different types of unit that can be brought in. Mm-hmm. And maybe if you win a game, you expand into one of your opponents and your opponent loses his. So let's say you lost a forest. And I gained it, so it would go into my 4th ring, and I've now got a forest, and that gives me access to things. It doesn't take whatever Ben happens to be using from that forest area away from him. They're still there, they're still recruited, they're still able to fight in the next game, the campaign, but they're slightly reduced, they're a bit more disorganized and disordered, they've just been run out of their own land, maybe they've got family back home, and they're worried about their family. Am I killing everybody in there?
Yes, probably, Jerry, it's you, Jerry.
But you know, so you've still got the fighters available. You don't end up with this part which you sometimes get in campaigns where you lose and lose and lose, and the person who's losing ends up with nothing of an army and then gets steamrollered. And once you lose that first game, you just get constantly smashed because you can't come back.
Is this something you print out then?
Yeah.
And then you literally write
own,
on it.
You, yeah. Got my own copy.
So
here,
so you would write on it. Do I take control of your ring then, or what happens?
Yeah, the segment of the ring, not the whole ring, unless
so
it was
the
very center.
I have my own ring, and you have your own rings.
Yes.
And you're trying to attack my rings, and I'm trying to attack yours, and trying to get into the.
Yeah, you're trying to hit the middle of the ring. You know, in the middle.
The core thing there is just as Jerry was saying, though, is that once you take a section, you effectively, take some of their units a little bit further down off out of the pecking order as they were before, but in the next campaign turn, that segment will go back into your army effectively. Mm-hmm. So it allows you to sort of bring together a little bit of a it allows you to, do what you want to try and stop the opponent from using such and such a unit to their most effective nature, but then it comes back to that person later on in the game. So it's a really nice sort of like back and forth between that, which is, I think, is really nice. The other cool thing about this as well is, as we were saying with those kingdoms, is you get that core element of how your force is. So you say at the beginning, I am going to be elves. So your main city is elves. Mm. But then, because of the rarities of the different regions around your city and within other ones, you can actually include a human city within your kingdom, or you could include a dwarven one or a goblin one. Now that's cool, but you're not going to get access to all their like high tier characters, as Jerry was saying earlier. You could only get access to certain elements of that. So even if you are going to be playing something like an elf force that is mixed with all the other different factions, you can't take everything you want all the time. There are things that are still going to be very unique to specific factions, which I think is really cool.
It does unlock a lot of that cross-faction buyability. Warren, you were talking about dungeon monsters, you used to love buying everything. This gives you a reason to buy from other, you know, sort of ranges within the entire thing, which I quite like.
Pull all your fantasy collection together and have a crack at it.
And right. I was just going to say quickly, the other cool thing about this is that we've talked a little bit about sort of like troops and infantry and champions and mages. There are also a plethora of different monsters in there. And as me and Jerry were talking about earlier in, when we're taking a little bit of a break, there are loads of weird stuff that no one has ever used in any game or ever, as far as I can tell, but Joe has managed to push into this game to using it, so it's very cool. Yeah.
Well, look, we'll be looking more at Oathmark over the coming weeks, because I want to get a deep dive into it with you guys. Mm-hmm. But for the moment, next up, we've got Kickstarters. Okay, Kickstarters, Ben. Mm-hmm. You have two shots of this, man.
Okay, well, I got two for two last week, so hopefully I can do the same thing this time. But anyway, so the first one we're going to be looking at is a mammoth one, and possibly could end up being one of the biggest board gaming Kickstarters that has ever existed. And this is for Cephalofair Games' or Isaac Childress' Frosthaven. So a lot of people will know Gloomhaven, which is the massive game from him that stormed through the world, took to the top of Board Game Geek. I've completed the main campaign, but nowhere near enough of the side quests to call
Look at the funding.
Exactly. It's going up again.
And this
they're having to make 40,000 of these.
Yeah, this is the standalone expansion or next step for the sort of Haven series, as I like to call it, where you can play as either 1 to 4 players diving into a expansive dungeon delving world where you are heading up into the north of this fantasy world to try and bring the town of Frosthaven back from the brink of extinction. In this game, you'll be playing as one of 6 different characters, and then there are about 10 or 12 other ones that you can go and pick up as well and try and unlock throughout the rest of the campaign. And you'll be heading out into dungeons, following the main storyline, delving for treasure, beating up monsters, and then coming back and bringing all those resources and gold you've found in order to either craft yourselves weapons and armor to use in future quests, or to help rebuild the town itself. One of the big things about Gloomhaven when it first came out is that it had a massive, huge map that you could stick stickers onto, and that's for all the different regions you found and that kind of thing. In this game, you've got the big map, but you've also got a smaller town map as well, where you can stick on new buildings that you build with the resources that you find. So everyone's going to start off with effectively a blank canvas, and throughout the rest of your campaign, which took us about 3 or 4 years to complete, this is doing it maybe once every month or so. There is a lot for you to dive into here and make your own with a unique style. The gameplay itself is all sort of brewed up by Childress himself. It was all effectively a one-man project when it came to the rules side of things when the game first came out. And it was all done around his love of dungeon delving and sort of role-play adventures, but also trying to make it so that it was less luck-based. Because a lot of the sort of dungeon delvers you see on the market nowadays have a lot of dice in them, and that's all fun and, you know, that's really cool. But he wanted to try and make it a little bit more tactical. And so Gloomhaven, and by extension Frosthaven, are games which are done by driven by card-driven mechanics. So you have a hand of cards that works as your actions during a turn, but it also acts as your effectively like your stamina in game as well. And when that card deck runs out, you're beat and exhausted and you have to retire. So it's all about not only using the cards at the right time in the right way alongside everyone else around the table, but also making sure you've got enough of them to get from one end of the dungeon to the other and defeat the boss, or you know, find the treasure and then get out of there at the same time as well. So an immensely extensive task that they've done here. Sorry, yes?
Is this what the stickers get stuck onto, or what's this?
Yeah, so that is the big map that they're going to include in Frosthaven, that includes the sort of outer reaches of the town and then the town itself beneath. And as you can see, there's a whole bunch of spaces there where you're going to be able to stick buildings onto and stuff.
I do like the fact that you're able... Oh, sorry, Warren.
How complicated is the game to play? I'm asking because I was very fortunate, actually, before lockdown... Yeah. I managed to pick up a copy of Gloomhaven.
Cool.
Yeah. In fact, I have it here in Studio One. It's the only board game, I believe, that I actually managed to extract from the studio. Is it something I could play with kids, or is it going to be too difficult?
I think they'd have to be a little bit older to play it, I think, personally. I think just from the sort of mechanics of how the cards play and stuff like that, because it's divorced itself
from
dice.
So you mean by the end of this lockdown, then they should be able to play?
Oh, yeah, yeah. By the end of the lockdown, that was fine. But no, once you get your head around the mechanics and how it works, because it's a little bit different from what a lot of people have played in terms of dungeon delving before.
That's class. It's good. Really, like the stickers. That's really cool.
Yeah,
man, if you were going to play Oathmark, do you know the rings? If you made sticky things to stick to the ring,
yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah. This Kickstarter, very quickly, I do like the fact that you're able to get the original Gloomhaven at a reduced price.
Yeah.
One thing I was going to say as well is that while the game is in effect a legacy game, because you stick stickers down, you tear up cards and you do certain things, or you know, whatever you want, they have actually put some stuff in the game for you to make it sort of renewable, effectively. So all the stickers, they're going to be available as different sticker sets that are removable. So you can, as I said before, yeah. So you're going to be able to stick things down, and then at the very end of all the campaign, you can peel them off and stick them back to a sheet,
or,
and then give it to someone else if you want.
I would stick them to magnetic sheeting, put rubber sheet and thing, and then just stick them down.
Or you end up going to your mate's house, and it looks like he's trying to do Sim City with all these skyscrapers and stickers that are all just laid on top of each other.
One of the things that I think is really cool about this game, though, is that once you effectively get towards the end of it, a lot of people, what they do is they take the map that they've created, and you know, all the different quests they've done, that kind of thing, and they put that onto a lot of people frame it. A bit like people do with the Pandemic Legacy boards and things like that, which I think is a really nice thing. But another cool thing about this game that I think is really good for Frosthaven going forward is that the game originally came with a bunch of plastic miniatures back in the day, and they were okay. You know, they're not the greatest miniatures out there, but they have taken the time to go back to the drawing board with the miniatures this time around and make the sculpts much more updated and dynamic and detailed. So for those people who like painting, then there are a whole bunch of heroes to play. Importantly, though, you're not going to have to sit on a mound of plastic that you will never, ever, ever touch, because all the enemies in the game are done as cardboard standees to make it nice and easy, which is really cool. So,
here's something fun.
I see it on Tabletop Simulator, right?
Yeah, that's what I was about to talk about.
Yeah. Ben, would you fancy maybe taking us through the Tabletop Simulator version of the game at some point?
Yeah, I'd be up to do that. Yeah, yeah, it's good.
Well, we could maybe even live stream that.
That'd be cool.
So,
yeah.
Everybody's on lockdown, so we could do it in the middle of the day for everybody.
Another cool thing as well is that there is actually a digital version of this that's separate from that as well. It's in sort of early access for the original Gloomhaven, but that exists as well if you like that. But the tabletop sim version would obviously come with everything immediately, which is really cool.
Whatever works for you, man. But it's a great way for us to experience the game.
Yeah, no, but as I say, I think. Hopefully, from my sort of chatter about Frosthaven and Gloomhaven, you'll know that it's a pretty damn good game. And I can see this very, very easily beating his old game to go to the top of BGG, potentially. So we'll have to wait and see how the storyline and the quest and stuff develops, because all that's very hush-hush and stuff like that, obviously.
No problem. Okay. Frosthaven, 28 days left. Mm-hmm. You may want to jump in on that one, guys. Right, next up, Ben, what have we got?
So next up, we've got something that has just one day left, as you're seeing this. And this is from the guys at Crooked Dice. And this is for the Argonauts 70V program guide and also miniatures range. Now, 7TV is a game that allows you to play through really awesome pulp-style movie TV episodes on the tabletop. So think James Bond or Blake Seven and that kind of thing. You can play all those kind of things on the tabletop and have a lot of fun with it because effectively you're making up a TV show, but you're also playing the miniatures game at the same time. Mm-hmm. This is then extrapolated on with a bunch of program guides. Now, they've done these in the past for the likes of Scooby-Doo and all sorts of weird things like that, and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and all sorts of things. But this one takes us to the world of Argonauts, and this is a look at the vast collection that surrounds a particular mad inventor who's called Dr. Ulysses Argo, and his creations, his weird cybernetic creations and that kind of thing, robots and stuff like that, that he's using to try and take over the world. And you play as heroes that are heading into the midst of his bases and stuff to try and stop his machinations. And so the program guide will allow you to dive through all the different scenarios for this, learn about all the different characters and play as both sides of the coin at the same time. As well as the program guide, which is obviously the written portion of this, there's also going to be a whole bunch of new miniatures and also a re-release of some of the older miniatures as well. So if you like some of the stuff that they've done in the past, they're going to be grouping that all together to create some really interesting new characters and minion groups and stuff like that too. Some of my favorites... Always nice to see the sort of like, what are they called? The boob gun style enemies from Austin Powers. Fembots, yep. That's it. The Fembots are back there as well, which is really cool to see. They've also gone to a lot of sort of popular media and stuff and taken some of the characters that you might know from different TV shows and stuff and worked them into the game as well. And they've got some of the big, massive Argonaut robots as well, which is really awesome too. So a very cool collection of really nice and unique miniatures and for a nice and unique game as well.
By your commands.
Happy days. Right, guys, that wraps us up. Remember, come and join us over in the Cult of Games over and on tabletop.com on Sunday when we have our XLBS show nice and early Sunday morning to tail off your weekend. It's a show that we make specifically for the folk that are keeping the project alive at the moment. The only income the project gets is from Cult of Games members. So those £3.79 a month make all the difference at the moment, guys. So if you fancy hopping in for a bit of entertainment, I guarantee you it'll be the best £3.79 you've ever spent. Right. Okay, you dudes, thank you very much. I will see you guys on Sunday morning, and I will see you guys on Sunday morning. Have a great week of isolation. Go ahead and check out our other content on screen now. And while you're at it, why not hit subscribe? And remember to ding our dong. Go on, you know you want to click it. Go on.